Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to bonus session 4, Models of Management and Stewardship, Collaboration in Ministry. We are very, very blessed for all of us to be able to be together today for this special session with Father Sean Prince and the staff of St. Pius X. You can read Father Sean's bio in the Whova app, so I'm not going to go into that. He assures us that he'll do some introduction as he begins this session. And so together, let us one final time during this conference pray our conference prayer. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Loving and gracious God, we ask you to open our hearts to your Son's life and ministry and to answer the call to be his disciples. May our response be rooted in the gospel. May we be ever mindful of the needs of our communities, and may our stewardship flow from a profound sense of gratitude for your many blessings. By the gift of the Holy Spirit, empower and inspire us to respond in a way that brings hope to others and reveals the love that comes to us through Jesus Christ. We ask this in his name, who is Lord forever and ever. Amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Father Prince.
Good morning, everyone. The last session. Everybody ready to go home? I am. I've been here since Thursday. So, excuse me. All right, so before we begin, just a few introductions. I think some of you have been to my presentation earlier or may have been to my presentation last year. My name is Father Sean Prince. I'm from the Diocese of Richmond, Virginia. I am a Norfolk native, which is where my parish is. I graduated from Wake Forest University with a poli-sci and history degree, and then I went and worked in HR for a number of years. So I actually worked in the professional world for 3 years. Before entering seminary, I studied at Catholic University in Washington, D.C., and was ordained a priest in 2012. And my first assignment was as campus chaplain at William & Mary, as well as the part-time parochial vicar at St. Bede, our largest parish in our diocese. I did that for 1 year and then received the misfortune of being named a pastor in just after 11 months as a priest. So I was a pastor for 5 years, and in that 5 years, about 2 years into it, I was also named the director of worship for the diocese, a position that I held for 6 years. And then when a new bishop came in 2018, 6 months after he arrived, he asked me to leave the parish and become his priest secretary. I did that for 3 years. And praise God, I'm now back as a pastor at St. Pius X in Norfolk. And several of my staff members are here with me and have been at the conference. Some, this is their first time. Others, they have been coming for several years now. I serve on a number of different commissions and committees. Again, my CV and everything is up there. My background is liturgy and sacramental theology, and our parish is about 1,200 families. And our school is around 190 students. So joining me today, at the very end, all the way on your left, is Miss Vanessa Brunn. She's a director of finance for our parish and school. Next to her is V. Barto. She oversees facilities and development. She used to also help with stewardship on the parish side. Next to her is Mark Zafra, our school principal, and next to him is Miss Cass Hooker. She's the director of evangelization. There were two senior staff members that weren't able to be here, Kat Ginkwanko, who's our liturgy ministry coordinator and youth minister, as well as Rob McBride, our director of music. So by a survey of hands, how many of you work in a parish setting? Okay, a vast number of you. How many of you work at the diocese or chancery? Okay, just a few of you. How many of you work at a school? One, or two, okay. Just a few of you, all right. Is this your first ICSC? Yes, okay, great. How many of you are attending the talk because of the topic? Did it sound interesting, something to helpful? Okay, great. How many of you have no idea why you're here this morning? Okay. All right, yeah, my staff, exactly. They don't know. I just told them you need to sit up front and answer questions. They're like, we have no idea what you're going to talk about. I'm like, I'm going to talk about the parish. Don't worry about it. Just a disclaimer before I begin. What I'm about to explain is just simply how things turned out at our parish. I know I put in the description, oh God, another presentation in which a priest gets up and talks about how wonderful and great their parish is and their school is and everything. No, what I'm hoping that you would, you know, this is not a perfect model. This is just a model in a sense. And I'm not saying that this is the end all be all, that this is going to work for everyone. But my hope is that as we walk through this, that some of these ideas, you might be able to pick a few, or you might find some that might work for you and help you as we all continue to sort of rebound and recover from COVID. And you might have some strategies for parish growth and school and parish integration, especially that last part, if any of you happen to have a parish school. If you're at a parish that has a school but you don't work at the school, just some ideas on that. Now, that's going to be really annoying if it does that. Okay. As we get started, just some sort of like a key or a legend for you when I start talking and everything. The fiscal year in the Diocese of Richmond is July 1st to June 30th. And so whenever you see me sort of reference FY20, that 20 is the end of the fiscal year. So that means it was the year that ran from July of 2019 to June of 2020. It may not seem like a big deal, but again, I just wanted you to sort of understand that and get that reference that it's not calendar year, it's sort of mid-year. So St. Pius X BC, before COVID. Basically, the number of families that we had in 2019 was around 823, and then up until fiscal year 21, we had about 919, and then you can see the number of individuals that we had there as a parish. I did not arrive at the parish until July 1st, which was the beginning of FY22. So I was not there for any of the COVID time. Those were actually the 3 years that I was working with the bishop as his secretary. Our school population, as I think many of you probably have seen yourself as well. Okay, good. We started out around 220, or above 200 was our kind of average of where we were. But then, of course, when COVID hit, the numbers dropped. And then, of course, the next year, we really had a significant drop in our school enrollment due to COVID-19. As far as our finances went, for fiscal year 2019, at the end of the year, we had brought in, this is just offertory, about $553,000. And then you can see, of course, when COVID hit, we dropped $515,000. And then in fiscal year 21, we dropped to $511,000. So you can see what the differences is of what the delta that we lost over those years. As I think this is a trend, how many of you saw the similar trend in your own parishes, of course? Yes, a drop-off in a sense for the most part. One thing that did help our diocese in the COVID time was I was the one of the chairs of the COVID response team in working with the diocese, and V. Barto was my assistant. I've been working with V for almost 10 years now. She was my assistant when I was in the Office of Worship, and we were basically with another gentleman running the COVID operation for our diocese and the response. And so one of the things that we were able to do was, not just with my friendship, but also my work with Margaret Catley, our executive director of our foundation, was we got on the train early for online giving, and we did a massive blitz campaign. And we believe that in looking at data from other dioceses or whatever, it really kind of saved us because we were very quick to getting on to online giving and pushing it with all parishes and helping all parishes with it, that this almost 7.5% decline was around the average of what our parishes face, where we saw that nationally some parishes were hitting anywhere from 15 to 25% of a loss, as some of you may have experienced. When I arrived, this is what the staff structure was at my parish. There was a deacon who was the part-time facilities coordinator. We had a pastoral associate who was full-time and oversaw liturgy, adult faith, and religious education. There was a business manager full-time, a youth minister full-time, an administrative assistant full-time, another administrative assistant that was part-time 20 hours, a bookkeeper part-time, and then a music minister that was only 14 hours. There were also three advisory councils, a parish council that had about 6 members, a finance council that only had 3, and a school board that had around 10 members, more or less, in a sense. The mood of the parish was us versus them, the school versus the parish. We are separate. We are not equal. We are not together. I say this, and I have said this, and my staff have all heard this too, that on our property there is the church, which as you look at the property is to your left, and then the school is to your right, and there is a driveway that runs right between them. The driveway is the Berlin Wall, essentially, is what I inherited. I think, you know, everyone would sort of agree with that. Now, when I arrived, my motto was Novus Deus Est. How many of you know Latin? Novus Dei Est. It's a new day. That's what that means in Latin. And so that really sort of, this is really going to get annoying. That was really sort of the responsorial psalm, basically, and how I sort of approach the parish. One of the things that I have done in my parish ministry work, and just a little bit about the staff, they're here to answer questions, but also they might chime in a little bit, maybe. I don't know if they will or not, but they may. Cass Hooker here on the end, I started working with Cass at my very first parish at St. Bede. So she and I have been working together for on and off for 12 years. And when I got to my first pastorate, there was an opening immediately when I arrived for a Christian formation position. And she applied. I hired her and brought her on board, and we did a lot of great work in formation and continue to do that. When I got to St. Pius, I'll get into that a little bit. But my approach to parish ministry and parish organizational structure, one of the things I did in HR was organizational management. And so I'm very strategic, I'm very OCD organized in a sense. And so what I did, a comment? Do you have a comment on that? No? Okay. So in formation, when you're in seminary, and those of you, any priests that are in the room, you know, there are pillars of formation. There are the four pillars of formation. I sort of took the same thing and applied it to the parish. There are four real pillars of parish life. There's worship, there's formation, there's community, and there's service. I don't know why it keeps doing that. And so when I got to St. Pius, I really started to look at all of the different ministries that there were and all of the different outreach opportunities that we had, as well as our staff, and began the process of aligning all of them to these four individual pillars. I'm just going to unplug it and plug it back in. I'm sorry. Marvels of technology. Now it's not going to work at all. Oh. How about if I just close it? No, it doesn't like that either. You're going to get your dongle? Okay, fine. All right. It worked perfectly the other day, of course. Maybe it's resetting. All right. Okay. I have the same one. I don't think mine's broken. All right. Here we go. Let's try this. All right. Yes, I want to allow that, please. Has it? Oh, well, that's comforting. Seriously. All right, well, I'll keep going. So I really, when I got there, one of the things that I definitely wanted to do was, of course, we had to address the mood, and there needed to be a mood adjustment. We could no longer have this us versus them mentality that was in place. And I really worked very hard in that first year, in those first months, that we're not separate anymore. We are one parish. The school is the primary ministry of the parish. And if we collectively, I said this many times and I still say it today, I said that if we do not agree as a parish community that the school is our primary ministry, then I need you to tell me, because I'm going to close the school. because we have to focus on the school. We made a decision in the 1950s after we started the parish that the school was going to be a part of us and part of our community and who we are, and we have to embrace that. And if we don't feel that that's where we are today, then why are we investing and spending millions of dollars a year on a Catholic school? And of course, all the parishioners are like, no, it is important. It is important to us. And so we have continued our efforts with working with the school. So basically, lovingly and gently, I let it be known, because it had to be known, that I'm the pastor and I'm going to be making the decisions and I'm going to be deciding how we do things moving forward, because my predecessors were not as direct, shall we say, in that regard. And as many of you may have encountered, as we all have encountered, I'm sure, that when leadership is not present, a vacuum is created. And when that vacuum is created, someone else steps in to fill it. And what I walked into was a staff that was very divisive and was very much at each other's throats. And Vanessa could speak to that. I doubt she will, but she was one that was, you know, there with that. And so I really kind of had to let it be known among the parish staff of, you know, how things were going to be. But doing it in the most Christian way possible and making that, you know, evident to everybody and really trying to help, you know, move us beyond this division that we had. The pastoral staff, not the administrative staff, was really the ones that were really having challenges with each other. In fact, at my very first staff meeting that I had, I show up at the staff meeting, and Vanessa was there for that staff meeting. And when I got there to the staff meeting, we went around, we had the discussion, and, we got there, I showed up, and the deacon said, "All right, let's get started, everybody's here." And I looked at him and I said, "Is this how it works?" "Oh yeah, I start the meeting and I run the meeting." I said, "Okay." So we went through and the meeting happened and everything, and apparently there was this form that everybody had to fill out to know that you're going to have a conversation or you're going to contribute to the meeting, and I didn't fill out the form. Well, I didn't know about the form. So when the meeting finished and everybody had gone around and we were done, the deacon said, "Okay, well, thanks, everybody. You know, we'll see you next week." And I said, "Excuse me." I said, "I have some things to say." "Oh, well, you didn't put them on the form." I said, "Well, it's a new day, and we're done with the form." So, on day one that I showed up, the pastoral associate came to me on my first day and said, "Yeah, I'm resigning." And I said, "Oh, okay." And he had applied weeks before. So where we live in our area, there is a tunnel, two tunnels actually, that separate the peninsula from the south side, if any of you are familiar with the Tidewater region of Virginia. And he lived on the other side of the tunnel, and they've been doing major tunnel construction, and it will take, I mean, Cass and V live on that side of the water, and God bless them, they drive 40 minutes every day to come to work. I don't know why they put up with me, but whatever. And they take that tunnel, and some days it could be a 30, 40-minute drive. Other days it could be a two-hour drive. And so that pastoral associate was doing that for 5 years, and he was been looking for a job on the other side of the tunnel. He found one, and he decided to step away from the parish. Okay. In the first week, the full-time administrative assistant resigned as well when I was there. And so now I've got these two major roles open. She and her family were relocating. They just had two babies. No family was in the area, and they really needed some family to help them with childcare. So they moved down to North Carolina. So I didn't take any of it personally that it was me or whatever. I mean, a few months later, someone did say, "Well, you know, you do have a reputation in the diocese." I thought, "Oh, great." they're like, "You were the bishop's secretary. Everybody knows you." I'm like, "Oh, all right, whatever." So the deacon asked me about the pastoral associate role, the one that started the meeting and ran it, because he wanted to apply for the job. And I told him, "Well, that job's gone. We're not going to have that anymore." I take the approach, I know that it may be not be a favorable approach, and to anyone who has the job in the room, I am not attacking you. I am not in favor of pastoral associates. I do not support the role, and the reason that I do not support the role is because, in my experience, when a pastoral associate is hired, they are hired by a pastor to fit what that pastor needs and what that pastor's outlook is on the parish and how that pastor operates. And what I have seen in my experience is when new pastors come in, there is more often than not a rub between the pastoral associate and the new pastor because there's a new vision and what the old, you know, pastor was doing. And so it can really create some challenges. So I took the pastoral associate role as I did at my old parish too that had one. And I realigned at my old parish the role with actually what the gifts of the individual were. And she thrived and did a phenomenal job in that role. At my new parish, I took the pastoral associate role, dissolved it, and really made the position that Cass stepped into, which was a director of evangelization, because we didn't have anybody focused on formation and evangelization, which post-COVID I felt was really critical and necessary for the parish. The administrative assistant job, I laugh, V was mine for 9 years, or for several years, still does some of the work. But I showed up and she said, all right, I write all your correspondences, I manage your calendar, and there was one other thing that she did. And I said, well, I really hate to break it to you, but I write my own letters and I manage my own calendar and I handle my own emails. And she said, well, it's a good thing I'm leaving because it sounds like I don't have a job anymore. And I said, no, I have found something. But I took that position and I think I kind of went through. Yeah, so with those two positions that were dissolved, I now had this pool of money. And with that pool of money, I was able to create Cass's position, which for 28 hours a week, as well as the position that V stepped into, which is Director of Stewardship and Development. She worked on the parish side for 14 hours a week. But then on the school side, we didn't have anybody doing development. And we needed someone doing development on the school side. And so in working with Mark, we decided to have more of a part-time development role to start, and that's how I was able to create the full-time position that V moved into. The part-time administrative staff member, we really needed someone to oversee communications as far as like bulletins and really getting the message out and really getting all the mediums that were available to really start to drive people back to Mass. And so I really wanted more of a communications coordinator, and so I took those two admin jobs, dissolved them both, and created that position. This was all within the first month, 2 months of being at the parish. Then at month four, the music minister resigned. And I wept. Because as a liturgist and as someone who worked with music ministers, and if any pastors in the room would know, and any that have had to do it, finding a music minister is next to impossible today in the church, especially one that is good. And one that will really help with the mission of the parish. So I did a full, we only had one for 14 hours, and I said to the parish, we have to stretch ourselves and we have to make this work. I worked with Mark, the principal, and, you know, when we finally got a candidate, we were able to hire someone in December of 2021. He stupidly started the week of Holy Week in 20 of 22. I asked him 3 times why. He's like, oh, it'll be great. How many of you have seen Jerry Maguire? You know the little boy in Jerry Maguire with the spiked hair that's always smiling with the glasses? That is exactly what my youth minister looks like. What? Music minister. What did I just say? Oh, music minister. Sorry. I haven't had any tea yet. So I am one that music ministry is one of the most critical roles in a parish, and we have to give immense care to that position. I spoke about that at my last presentation too. Music is one of the two areas that especially millennials respond to and say is important to their worship experience. If you have a horrible music minister, you will have challenges in your parish. And I have seen that in other parishes in our region, and I've experienced that when I have visited other parishes as well outside of the diocese when I've been on vacation. Then at month 9, the youth minister resigned from her position. So now I had to restructure the youth ministry role at the parish. And so we also had at the same time that the assistant principal and religion teacher was announcing her retirement, and I heard that someone that I had known in my early days of priesthood was looking for a job because she was doing campus ministry but wasn't interested in that anymore, wanted to sort of slow down a little bit. And I worked with Mark, and we were able to recruit this candidate and hire her as the part-time youth minister and also our part-time middle school religion teacher, because that's what the assistant principal religion teacher was doing. So we were able to make a full-time position and have her working some hours at the school and some hours at the parish. It all fell in, you know, perfectly. That position started in the second year, but we were able to sort of bridge that gap. And then from the assistant principal leaving, which was part-time, Mark and I talked and we said we've got to have a full-time assistant principal. It's necessary, and the role was created, and we were able to hire one in that second summer that I was there of July of 2023. In month 11 of my first year, the deacon and facilities manager resigned. He wanted to move closer to Richmond because he had his second grandchild that was born. And he and his wife were tired of driving back and forth each week, and they wanted to be closer to their grandchild. And so he actually took a job with the diocese and was living on the other side of the tunnel where Cass and V, I mentioned, and they're now 45 minutes from their grandchild, which is good. And so from that, we were able to create a full-time facilities maintenance manager position at the parish 50% and the school 50%, and the candidate started in August of 22. Weekly staff meetings that we had that were with all of the staff included part-time and full-time employees. When I first arrived there, I let that continue for the first year. I allowed those staff meetings to take place. I was still there, present for them. The principal was included because prior to my arrival, the principal was not included in staff meetings. It was just the parish staff, and then there was nothing involving the school at all. So I think if you have a school and you, that's a great way to continue to foster those relationships and make sure that the parish and the school are connected. It's as simple as having the principal at the weekly staff meeting or however often you have those staff meetings. So basically, to summarize the first year, what we did was created a director of evangelization position for 28 hours. We had a split school and parish position for development and stewardship. We had a music minister who also taught music then at the school, so we had another split role there. And then we had a youth minister and religion teacher that was a split role and a facilities position that was a split role. So I think you can see the pattern of what I began to do, which was to maximize the opportunities for the parish and the school by splitting these roles, creating full-time positions that each entity sort of paid and supported. And by doing that, it not only helped to support both the parish and the school and their needs, especially our facility. Our plant is about 7.5 acres, and we have about 89,000 square feet of buildings that we manage and you know, oversee. And so we have a lot of needs, and it's a very old plant. It's a very old facility. And so by creating these split roles, we were able to help both the parish and the school move forward and succeed. But then not only were we able to do that, it really, really helped change that mood that I mentioned, that we are separate. Because now we had both staffs sort of talking to each other and integrated with each other. And what naturally happens, and it's not just the church, it happens in all organizations, again, my background in HR, that new leadership comes in and eventually there are changes to staff. Some happen organically, some happen, you know, either forcibly, whatever it may be, and then eventually that mood can begin to shift. And really what happened was any remaining positions that there were, everyone started to see it's a new day, it's a new approach, it's a new way that we're handling things. Some stayed, and some decided to leave. That's natural. And so I just want to sort of put that out there to everybody that, you know, if a staff member comes and there's change and is like, oh, I'm leaving, I've been here 10 years or whatever, okay. Maybe it's time for them to move on. Maybe it's time for the organization, the parish, the school to part, and for new leadership and new opportunities. It happens when a new pastor comes and goes as well. What I did in my second year to kind of keep us moving forward was I then created a senior staff, which is these four individuals and the two that are not here, because I now had about 11 to 12 individuals on the parish side, and then we still had about 40 to 45 on the school side with teachers, administrators, etc. So I can't manage all of that myself, and so I created a senior staff. Each of these individuals, for the most part, have either a direct report or several direct reports to them, or they, if they don't have a direct report, they have a number of ministries that they oversee as well. The seven of us really conduct all of the business of the parish, the day-to-day and the strategic planning, and do a little bit of that with the school. There's another leadership team on the school side. And then one thing that I do with my staffs that if you don't do this in your parish, pastors in the room, consider it. Staff members, consider exploring it with your pastor, is I do strategic planning with my staff. And I'm going to go into that in a little bit of what that looks like and how we have taken care of that. But what we do is every January we take a full day, one whole day, and we leave the office. We oftentimes go to the rectory and we evaluate the various pillars that I mentioned earlier and what we're doing in them and how we're working in them, etc. I'm going to get into that a little later. And then in May, we go away for a three-day retreat. We leave and go about 3 or 4 hours from the parish. We go out into the mountains, and there's this great, wonderful farm that we stay at. It's really not a farm. It's like a resort, actually. But we go out there. The first year I did all the cooking. Last year, we split up the cooking. In the days, going through and doing strategic planning, and then that's what we do the first half, and then the last half we sit down and we basically spend an entire day doing the calendar for the next year. And we set the calendar for the school and the parish. We get it all organized and done. So that way, when we're running the day-to-day operations and having our senior staff meetings, we're not sitting there spending a lot of time analyzing the calendar and going through the calendar. That is monotonous. And frankly, that drives me absolutely bonkers when I sit in a staff meeting and that we do that. And I think it drives me crazy because I'm strategic. And I tell my staff all the time, and they know this, I'm not thinking about today. I'm thinking about a year from now. And I'm thinking 2 years from now. That's just the way my mind works. I know not all priests think that way, and I understand that. But that's kind of my approach, and how I think we've been successful is because of looking at it from that position there. So at the end of the second year, my second year there, though, I really needed to reorganize the finance offices, and so I eliminated the position that Vanessa was in as the business manager at the parish, but then I created a director of finance that oversaw all finances for the school and the parish. And then there were two bookkeepers, one at the parish and one at the school, and I eliminated both those bookkeeper jobs and created one financial assistant position. So we went from three individuals to two, and both of those individuals now handle the finances for the entire St. Pius X plant and operation. I think it works very well. I know it was a challenge and a struggle for Vanessa because she didn't know the school side, and that's a completely different animal. But it has really been a great advantage for us, especially as a senior staff, that when we sit down to talk, especially financial matters, there's one person in the room that has an idea and an understanding of the entire plant and operation. I then also created a liturgical ministers and youth coordinator because the religion teacher approached me after the first year and said, this looked great on paper, but it's driving me crazy to try to do this split. And I said, I completely understand and I see that. So I really needed someone to take on liturgical ministries because we were starting to grow in that area. And so she now handles liturgy as well as youth ministry. She used to be a youth minister. She's full-time. She's on the senior staff. She couldn't be here. But that position was created a year ago. This is basically what the org chart looks like for our parish. I know you can't really see it, maybe from where you are, but each of these yellow individuals here are the ones, the senior staff, and you can see all of the different ministries that are listed under those staff members, as well as any direct reports that they may have as well. This is another OCD thing that I do at my parishes, which is put together org charts. I mean, I was in HR, for God's sakes. But I take every ministry of my parishes and align them to a staff member. I'm very hierarchical, I guess, is what some people argue and think, but that's not what my objective is. My objective is, I, as the pastor, especially of a parish with 1,200 families, I cannot keep track of every ministry. It's just not humanly possible. But I want every ministry to feel that they have a direct voice to the pastor, that they're not guessing, who do I go to and who do I talk to? So, for instance, everyone that is involved in the Legion of Mary at our parish, whenever they need anything, whenever there's something happening, whenever they've got an initiative, whenever they've got a question, they know that they call Cass. And Cass is who they talk to and they go through. And when they approach me about an event or wanting to do something, I say, talk to Cass. Please talk to Cass. So that way it all stays with one staff member, so that when we are in a staff meeting, something comes up for Legion of Mary, Cass brings it to everyone's attention. And we can talk about it. If it's a financial matter, if there's something going on, then Vanessa's able to chime in with that. Another great example I would say is, I want to take the Friends of... How do you say that? Huh? Fiacra, Friends of Fiacra. So that is a group of individuals that handle all of the grounds, like plants and flower beds and those types of things. And so that's a ministry that just started. So whenever they need money or funding or volunteers, they know to come to V. V comes to the staff meeting. We talk about it. If we need to find funds for it, Vanessa's there, and we're able to sort of work through that. So it keeps everything pretty structured and keeps everything in place so that you're not bouncing back and forth. Because I've found in so many parishes when I was a seminarian or when I was the vicar that when there isn't this structure and organizational sort of chart in place, people don't know who to talk to. And then they're talking over each other, they're bouncing back and forth, you know, whatever it may be. So anything that you can do to sort of put some of that structure in place, I have found can be rather helpful as well. So, any questions so far? All right, I'll just keep going. Strategic plan and planning. So this began in the spring of 2022, so everybody knew about the synod process. We were all invited to be a part of the synod process. Great. So, of course, we had to do the same thing, so we conducted it in the spring of 2022. We had over 100 parishioners that were at roundtable discussions. We identified strengths and opportunities for growth in the parish. We used it and answered the questions the diocese asked of us, as well as what the Holy See asked of all of us, and the results were then shared with the parish in August of 2022. Well, I said, this is great. We just had this conversation, and we have all this data that's not just about what people think about the church in general, but also they've contributed a lot to how they feel about the parish of St. Pius. I said, this is the beginning of our strategic plan. We need to take this data, send to the diocese what they want, but then take the rest of it and utilize it for what we can utilize it for our own purposes. So what we did was in the end of 2022, early 2023, we then took those findings and we scheduled individual interviews. We had about 50 people that were willing to participate. I got up and made the announcements every weekend. I make the announcements every weekend at my parish. That's a side note. I do not allow anybody to make announcements but me. And that really irritates people, but it also helps to control the message, and it also helps to sort of just keep everything on point in a sense as well. And so I asked people to come and help out. We got about 50, so about half of those that did roundtables, and we sort of narrowed down on the data that we found from the synod. And that really helped us to frame our strategic direction, and we were able to finalize the plan and execute it and release it in July of 2023, and it's a three-year plan. So we will have to begin to look at that plan again. From that plan, we created a plan that followed the four pillars of the parish, and this is where I created what I call the parish synodality team at the parish. There are about 10 individuals from various backgrounds, ages, ethnicities, years at the parish. Just a little bit about the demographic breakup of my parish. It's about almost 50-50 Filipino-Anglo. So it is a very diverse parish. They are not divided communities in any way. They never have been. They're very integrated, and they attend each other's various engagements or ministerial opportunities. If there are Filipino customs or practices or liturgical celebrations or devotions, the Anglo community is a part of it. So it is not two communities, but they are one, and it has been that way for decades, praise God. So in forming the parish synodality team, I made sure to ensure that the team represented what the parish looked like. We met three times in fiscal year 24 to evaluate each pillar, and this is what replaced the parish council. So I pretty much dissolved the parish council. I hate parish councils. I deplore them like anything in the world. And the reason is they don't know what they exist for, and they don't know why they're there. And I, as a pastor, don't know why they're there. And, you know, people generally don't know why they're there. And what happens is when I talked about that leadership void, pastoral councils start to step in and think they are the board of directors running the parish. In all of this work that I've been doing, I also was named the dean of my region when I came into the parish. And in my time as dean in the last 3 years, thank God I was not reelected, I have spent 40% of my time while I've been the pastor here running other parishes, because we've had so many temporary administrator roles that have been needed. My most recent one that I have been working with, I went into a parish council and parish finance council joint meeting, and the parish council informed me that they were running the parish. You can imagine how that went over with me. But anyway, so I replaced, but because I don't care for a parish council, I don't know what they do, there's still value, and you must have parishioners involved on a leadership level that are providing voice, that are connected to the community, that are being honest with you as a pastor and sharing information with you as a pastor. And so in creating this parish synodality team, they are there to help evaluate each of the pillars and how we're doing in them based on the strategic plan. These are our strengths and these are our opportunities of growth. And so every 3 months when we look at worship, you know, next month, let's say, we'll look at that. What are the strengths? What are the opportunities? How are we addressing them? How are we doing in those areas? And how is it working out? Same thing with the other three. And really, they're there to help keep us on track as parishioners that are engaged in multiple ministries. And when a pillar is coming up that that a staff member has oversight of, so like when formation comes up, Cass and Mark would be present for that meeting as well because they have responsibilities for ministries and such under those pillars. As far as our strategic plan goes, in the fall of 2025, we're going to be putting all of this information and the synthesis of data and everything up on our website so people can see it. And then the synodality team is going to meet this year quarterly. We've already started that process. And then next year, we have to begin data gathering with roundtables and one-on-one interviews to start a new strategic plan because the one we have now expires in 2027. So the thing that I also like to stress about strategic plans, and I think it's been talked about even here at various sessions, is it's great to have one, but if you don't do anything with it, it doesn't matter. And it makes no sense. So when I was at my old parish, we got into a practice where we did a big one, and then every year after that, we took one or two pillars and created an individual plan for each of those pillars. So every year, we were talking to parishioners and creating some plan, either the big one every 3 years or in individual pillars every 3 years as well. I know you can't see it. You can see it when the slides come up, but this is basically what the plan was. We had, you know, each of the pillars are highlighted and bolded in black there. Next to it in parentheses sort of explains what the pillar is. So community, for instance, is who we are as a parish, how we engage with one another, and our communications and social activities. It's not outside the parish, it's inside the parish. Service is how we do things outside of the parish. And under each area, we identified the strengths and what our opportunities for growth were. And when I meet with the strategic planning, synodality team, we review the strengths and review the opportunities for growth and then basically say, how are we doing in the strengths and how are we doing in the opportunities? Are we hitting the mark? Are we missing the mark? What can we do to sort of keep going in those respective areas? Now, this is an indication, when I said that the staff gets together and does strategic planning, the staff is aware of this and they lead their ministries and their efforts based on what's on the plan. The plan drives our parish operations. And so everything that we do, when Father comes up with a crazy new initiative, which he does all the time, there's an effort. I try to do it. If I don't, my staff keeps me in check, of making sure that it falls somewhere in this plan, that it is something that we're doing within this plan here. And if we can't do it, and they're very good, and this is why I love them and I think we work well together, if we can't do it, they will tell me, Sean, that's not going to work. We cannot do that. Okay, all right, let's table it. You know, we just have that relationship and we have that rapport because we all know that we've got to stay on this because this is what our parishioners have said is important to them. And we need to drive our parish operations from that. And so every 6 months when the staff gets together, they look at the plan and they look at their area of formation and they identify what are the strengths so this is for May's gathering. What are the strengths that we've had in formation since January of 2024? What are the areas of growth that we see in that area? In the next 6 months, I tell them, what are your goals for the next 6 months? And what are your goals for 12 months from now? So that when we meet again in January, what will happen is Cass and Mark and Kat will sit down and look at this. They'll review all of the strengths, and they might take some off. They might add others. They'll try to, hopefully, take what's under areas of growth and move them up to strengths. And then they'll address their goals here and remove, hopefully, all of these goals off and say, we accomplished all of these, and move these up or move some of these around and then set new goals. Again, it keeps us moving forward, and it keeps us in check. And so we spend about, I give each pillar about an hour and a half. So we do an hour and a half in the morning, 15-minute break, another hour and a half, then we have lunch, then we do an hour and a half, 15-minute break, hour and a half, and that's how we usually are able to get through the day, with that. The next thing I want to talk about, and then we'll move into questions, was the other thing that we did was rebranding. These were our brands when I showed up. This makes sense. What the hell is that? I mean, I know what it is, but what does that say about St. Pius? Nothing. I don't know. So with V has a marketing background and a marketing experience. She did wedding invitations and wedding designs, and she's done all kinds of marketing stuff for me for years. She sat down and looked at these logos and looked at how we could create new ones, and we relaunched them in the fall of 2022 with our website. We created new logos that really reflect who we are as a parish community, but then after we created those logos, we put out a media and usage guide, which said to everyone in the parish, if you're going to advertise something for the parish, this is the logo that you use. And we got so OCD to say, this is the color that you use, and here's the coding for the color. And if you do the background of your flyer, this is what the color code needs to be. Again, to create uniformity so that it created this image of we are one parish, we are one community. And so what we came up with were these new designs here. St. Pius X is, of course, named for St. Pius X. And so the keys, of course, are representative of St. Pius as, you know, one of the Holy Fathers, as the Pope. The Cairo is up there because of the fact that he was, I like to say, big on the Eucharist. And what I mean by that was he was the Holy Father that opened up Eucharist and opened up the reception of Eucharist for those at the age of seven. And so the Eucharist is central to his papacy. And then, of course, the water and the anchor, the bottom half of the crest here is actually taken from his crest as the Holy Father. But it represents our area because we're in tidewater with a lot of water and marine life, and that's what the anchor represents for us. The bird in the center is from the Trinitarian Fathers. Say it. Go on, you know it. You don't know it? I always get it wrong. God bless them. The Trinitarian Fathers who founded the parish in the 1950s, that is their symbol. There's maybe 10 left today. They were all over the country. They're mostly now in Baltimore. They ran the parish up until 1982, and then the diocese took it over in 1982. So as an ode to them and as an appreciation to them for founding the parish, that's why that's central to our logo. So it speaks very much to our parish, and when you go to this website on our parish, we outline and explain each of these symbols, and then there's the media guide and all of that information. We wanted there to, of course, because we are one, not two, we wanted a connection between school and parish. So we took the same crest and put it over a book, and this book and the Latin phrase on here is a dedication and an ode to the IHM sisters. Because the IHM sisters are who were the founding nuns that came, not the founding nuns, but they were the nuns that helped run our school for decades. We still have one IHM that still is involved in our school, but this was a way of connecting us to them and showing our appreciation for them and their great work, but also having a little bit of a distinction for our school logo, but still showing the connection to us as one parish and community. And so this design for our school logo is now slowly, because it's a multi-year integration, is now being integrated into our school uniforms. And so we are transitioning everything over to these logos, again, as a way of branding us. We then had car magnets made. So people have these magnets on their cars. So when you go around town, you can see these magnets sometimes from time to time, or stickers made. So again, you know, a great evangelization tool as well of having these stickers and these magnets on people's cars for them. One of the other initiatives that we've done too is new programming. We had a Lenten mission. We've had the Easter Vigil reception. When I showed up, I said, oh, we got to have an Easter Vigil reception. And my staff at the time, not many of them, said, no one's going to go. No one's going to go to it. It's a waste of your time. We're going to waste money on it. I'm like, no, I think they will go. I think they will. Nope, they're not going to go. It's a waste of your time. Don't worry with it. Well, I got up and I announced we're going to have the Easter Vigil. It's going to be great. There's going to be a reception afterward. Everybody come. It's going to be wonderful. And there were 250 people at the reception after the Easter Vigil. And they stayed until 2:00 in the morning. We also had wine, so that may have helped, but... So anyway, we also do a Lunch and Learn series, which is a faith formation series. And so that's an opportunity where we bring four speakers in a year. They're on Sundays, and we offer lunch. And then after lunch, the speakers get up and offer their presentation. And it's been very successful. And we also do what's called Take One videos. I was recording some. They're a lot of work. We did it one Advent. And basically what it is we took every day of Advent except Sundays, and I delivered a video message. It was about a minute and a half. We called it Take One because it was Take 1 minute for prayer. We did it in Advent of 2021, and it's great, probably a mistake, because ever since we started it, we cannot stop it. The parish is obsessed with it. So we do it at Advent and Lent, and after 2 years of doing it, Cass and V and I work on it, and another individual that I used to work with, the four of us really run it and work on the scripts and the videoing and all of that. And after 2 years, I was like, we got to do something different because we filmed everywhere locally. So now it's basically, where in the world is Father? And so when I go on a pilgrimage, or when I come here, or wherever I go on my travels, I take all my camera equipment and I film like four or five videos. So we have the videos all mapped out through Lent of this year. And so when I go to Ireland in November, and Cass is going to join that trip, we have 25 videos we have to film while we're there in Ireland. So now it's a matter of doing these videos while we're somewhere else in the world, but the videos get sent all over the world. We see the metrics and the data. They've been on every continent and been viewed on every continent. So I don't know how they're getting out there, but anyway. And then the school and the parish, they are getting closer and closer, and our initiatives do seem to be working. As far as investments go at the parish, I'm just going to fly through this. We do have several different investments that we've started to take advantage of. We had some savings at the parish, but it was just sitting in a general savings account, and I said this needs to go to the endowment fund with the diocese, so we started moving some of the money. That's basically what those slides are about. Now, all of these efforts and everything that we have done, great, wonderful. Now, this is the data to show that we have been, like I like to say, we've been successful. Because from 2021, which is June of when I arrived, to now, we have increased our families by almost 30% in the last 3 years. And we've increased the number of parishioners, individuals in the parish, by 20% in the time that we've been taking on these initiatives. In addition, at our school, we've stayed pretty steady. We were at 190, we dipped a little, we went up, we've dipped a little, and that's really kind of where we are as a school. Part of that is being in a military-heavy population. This year, in 2023, we lost 12 kids about 6 weeks before school because of transfers, and the new transfers coming in didn't necessarily make up the numbers. So it's been, our school is really a struggle for us and a challenge for us, and that really something that Mark and V and Vanessa and I have really, really had to work hard on, and it really, I would say, takes a lot of my time as the pastor with that. As far as our giving goes, in the first year that I was there, we increased our giving by almost $100,000 in the first year. We were up $22,000 in the second year, and last year we were up almost $60,000. So in the last 3 years, we've increased our general giving by almost 36% at the parish. And I attribute this to the initiatives that we've done of really sort of grabbing the bull by the horns and really listening to the parishioners, responding to the parishioners through the strategic plan, and doing the number of initiatives that we've done, and that has helped tremendously with our offertory, as well as bringing new families and new individuals into the parish community. This is a slide that I showed to the parish because, you know, oh, it looks impressive that we brought all that money in, wonderful, but what does it really matter and what does it really mean? Well, pre-COVID in our diocese, there was an average that parishes would increase their giving by 3% every year, on average, pre-COVID. So what I did was I sat down and I looked at the data and I said, okay, well, here's where we were when COVID first hit, and here's where we were the next year. And so if we were to do a 3% on what we should have brought in, which is the number that was here or whatever, we should have been at 585 is what we should have brought in fiscal year 21. But we only brought 511 in, so we're behind $75,000. But then in fiscal year 22, the first year that I happened to be there, thank God we brought in so much money, we were supposed to be at $600,000. But then we brought in 609, so we actually have a surplus. So basically what I was showing with this slide to the parish community was that because of our efforts and because of the work that we've done, financially it appears that COVID never happened here. because we made up all of the losses that we experienced as a result of that. And our funding continues to increase, which is wonderful and great, because we can support new initiatives as a result of it. And every year for the last 5 years, even before I got there, we have run in the red. So even in those years when COVID hit, we were still doing very well financially, and financially we continue to do well. Again, it's because I think we're responding to the parishioners, we're responding to what they're asking for. Music was a huge thing for the parish, because 14 hours a week, we were getting music, but we weren't getting to the level of what I think parishioners were hoping for. And when we took the chance and hired a full-time music minister, the music ministry at the parish has completely exploded. And as a result of that, that has had a significant impact on the parish as well. Our investment funds that I said were just sort of sitting in our savings account, they've really only been invested for 2 years. And in the 2 years that they've been invested, we've already made 32% off of our investment, about $80,000. And so, you know, doing those sorts of initiatives have also been helpful. And because of that, we're now able to start drawing returns on it. So this year, we're drawing almost $10,000 off of the investments that we put in there. We put in $250,000. It's now worth about $335,000. And that's been really over an 18-month growth. And so that's really kind of helped us as well. So I blew through that as quick as I could. But now for your questions, any clarity, if any staff members want to speak up and add anything, what would you like to know? Yes, ma'am.
I'd like to know one of your initiatives that didn't work.
And
then you can tell me one that didn't work.
Huh. I think an initiative that hasn't worked as well for us has been with the school. Some of the efforts that we've tried to do to increase enrollment, where we have gone to parishes and tabled at parishes, where we have gone out to farmers markets and such and tabled at those types of events, the amount of tabling that we've done and the amount of sort of putting our name out there and partnering with our military liaison in the area, I would have hoped that we would have seen more return from that. However, our neighboring Catholic school is trending about the way we are with numbers. And so the only thing I can conclude is that there just aren't the students, you know, to come in. So I would say that is an effort that has continued to be a challenge for us and a struggle, is really how do we get more Catholic students into our schools and attract more. As far as a successful initiative, I think there are two that really are continuous conversation pieces for the parish, and please jump in with it. I think the Take Ones are a continuous conversation for the parish, those videos that parishioners, when Lent ends, they're like, are you going to do one this summer? And I'm like, hell no. You got to wait till Advent, you know? And so there are a lot of work to do, but the parishioners just eat them up, and they love it. And then the other initiative are the Lunch and Learn series. People are hungry for faith formation, and we have done a great job of really trying to bring people in from the full range of the spectrum, to the more progressive voices, to the more conservative voices, to the middle of the roads, to priests, to nuns, men, women. You know, we try to look at all the demographics, all of the elements, so that we're not labeled as you just bring the liberals in or you just bring the conservatives in. That is really what we need to do. At my old parish, Cass and V and I worked together there. We started an institute in which we had a foundation that supported it, and we were able to bring international and nationally known top speakers in. We had Bob Barron, we had James Martin, we had Tom Reese, we had George Weigel, we had Carolyn Wu. I mean, we brought people in from Europe. It was phenomenal. We don't have those resources, but we can still do something.
That would be a follow-up question. You said you were at St.
D's. Yes.
Is that for that?
No, it was at Immaculate Conception in Hampton, which is my first pastorate for 5 years.
My sister goes to Our Lady
of Mount Carmel. Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You would, and my experience, and fellow priests may or may not agree with me on it, but I have been and spent a lot of time at the wealthy parishes, as they say, and they are more challenging to run than the non-wealthy parishes. And in fact, my parish is mostly blue-collar workers and military heavy, and I find that they jump in and are more generous with their time and their treasure, and you know, they're willing to really sort of get in. There's a lot more effort and work sometimes that goes into that in more affluent parishes. Just it's more relationship building and those types of things. You know, I mean, there's a number of factors in both, but really, yes, ma'am. We are a purple, yeah, Mark.
What is that?
It's on. Oh, just.
Yeah, the Purple Star designation is basically, shows that you support military families. And I think we were one of the first schools in our area to get it. And then it became a diocesan, hey, if you're in that area, you should work towards it.
So basically you have to show how you support them.
Renew every 2 to 3 years. I think we just got our second renewal last year. So it is something that military families look at. I think one of the things that in our area, and St. Pius thrived in the 70s, 80s, because if you worked on base, you lived close to the base. And so our enrollment was double, not triple back then. But then as time went on, most people don't live near the base anymore. They live near the beach. They live a little bit further out. So that's the challenge that we have. We are very strong military, and yeah, whenever a military family kind of looks, they check for the Purple Star, they look at proximity where they work, and so we benefited. But again, as Father Sean said, double-edged sword, right? When they get called for orders, they lose them, and we can't do anything about that.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. Do we subsidize, does the parish subsidize the school? Yes and no, and why I'm saying yes and no with that. We used to, many, many years ago, parishes would have a subsidy that they would give to the school. Now all parishes are, have a separate tax that goes to school, enhancement and work. And so every parish, whether you have a school or not, it's been in effect for over 10 years now, you are taxed. So you have your cathedraticum, and then you have a tax to support Catholic schools. If you have a school, that tax is much lower. And so we pay, I think, like $50,000 maybe for, on the parish side as part of a school tax, so to speak. But then what our school receives is almost $90,000 to $100,000 because, again, the other parishes in the area that don't have schools, part of their resources come to support our school as well. Yes, ma'am. It ranges, it is more of the, it is more on the boomer side and older generations, but there are millennials that are attending and there are, even younger, generations that are attending. It just depends on the topic, and who the speaker might be, and we do try to take that into consideration of how we can engage others, and we advertise it in our, a diocesan paper too. You can advertise in the diocesan paper and it's free. There's no charge in our diocese, and most parishes aren't utilizing it, but we're probably running an ad at least 33% of the time in the year. So, yes, ma'am. We don't provide child care at the Lunch and Learn. We have, I think to your question about initiatives, we have tried that off and on sometimes with child care, and it either doesn't get utilized. At my old parish, we had a nursery, and we would hire nursery workers for the Keene Institute events that we would have, and we might get one kid in there, maybe two. So we offered it, and we ended up paying for it. Yes, sir. It's on Sundays. So those are on Sundays, so it's after the 11 o'clock Mass. Yes, ma'am. The what?
Oh,
the videos. They are available through our YouTube channel. which is...
So what we do with that, I do it like a subscription. So, you know, we do a big push before the Take One series comes out and sign up for our email newsletter. And so there's a separate distribution on our, we use MailChimp, there's a separate distribution just for Take
One. I don't have any
One.
Videos
you
downloaded.
Don't even have to be a parishioner.
I don't think the internet's all that good
series,
in here.
But you go on that Take One distribution list. And every morning at 5 a.m., you get an email with a link to the video.
True.
And these videos go to not only the parishioners, but it goes to the school families as well to kind of that connection again.
Right. And actually our school, some of the school classrooms when in Advent and Lent, I have learned, start their day with the video. So it becomes an integral part of their faith formation, you know, too, for the day. Other questions? I put the parish web address up on there. Feel free to visit it if you have any questions for me or any of the staff. Of course, we're around. You can ask us. All of our contact information is up there, and there's also information. The internet doesn't work in here. I would take you to the website to show you. But there is a media tab, and from the media tab, which is where you can find the link for the Take One videos if you want to watch old series or if you want to subscribe to them and utilize them yourself, you're welcome to. So they're up there as well. Any other questions, comments? Yes, ma'am.
I have a question about your pillars.
Yes.
Why did you pick four? I think we have seven.
So I picked four because in formation of priests and in formation of any clergy, actually, there's four pillars. Intellectual, spiritual, human, and pastoral. Yes, thank you. So because there are four pillars in the formation of priests, and that has been in existence, what many people don't realize is the Sulpicians, who've been around since the 1700s, really created the model of formation that has been utilized not just in this country but around the world. And most formation models stem from what they did, and part of their formation has always been those four elements and those four pillars. So in formation, it was kind of grilled in you. You had to focus on all four of those. That I just found success with four, and that's where I kept the four with our area too. Yes, ma'am.
And then, I chair our stewardship pillar.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Tells parish council what we're doing or plan on doing. So under your committees, where you have all your committees, how do they report to you, or who do they report to, and how often?
So when V started at the parish, she was handling stewardship and development, because all of these ministries were all over the place when I arrived, because the staff was all over the place. And I said to her, I'm like, we need to get, and I used this model at my old parish, and I said, we need to, she's like, you want to pull out the daggone org chart and do this again, don't you? I'm like, yes. So she actually spent her first year or two working to help get all of this solidified, working with these ministries. Cass worked with the faith formation ones, but V really kind of helped to spearhead to kind of get us all sort of on this page. And then once we got on this page and we got things aligned, now we've sort of programmed the parish to take and know who their individual is that they respond to. So the stewardship role wasn't necessarily vital for us anymore, because each of these staff members knew who their ministries were and what they were responsible for, and it spread the love, so to speak, around, and it helped to keep the staff members connected
to the parish and what was happening, so that everybody sort of really tried to stay in check or stay in connection with the parish. So that's why I said, when I talk about the pillars and when we as a synodality team meet and we talk about service, that's why Vanessa has service ministry. She comes to that pillar discussion, because when we're talking about service in those areas, she knows the ministries and what's going on with them. And when we talk about community as a whole, what we're doing as a parish group, V is part of that because of a number of her ministries, but also with facilities and that sort of stuff. Same thing with formation. Cass and Kat go, and Mark from the school. And then when we do worship, Rob and Kat come, as well as the deacon, you know, for those conversations. Yes, ma'am. You had your hand up first in the back. It took about, about a year or 2 years to fully get us into this plan here, basically. Yeah. I'll go this way. Yeah.
How do you deal with squeaky wheels in the system, right? So a lot of change, whether it be ministry leaders or staff or resistant or just, when you can't do that, how do you navigate those challenges?
I fired him. No. At my old parish, my first parish that I showed up at, I had the beautiful fortune of both of the two retired pastors were living in the parish and still worshiping in the parish. And this was my first pastorate, and I've been ordained 1 year. So I kind of walked into what could have been an explosion. But I, praise God, had the savvy for it, that whenever I was doing a major initiative, I called both of them and I talked to both of them. I was like, what do you think about this? How do you feel about it? Because I needed their buy-in, because I knew that parishioners were calling them, and I knew they were talking to parishioners, even though they would say, he's the new pastor, you know. But if I could have their buy-in, it made change so much easier. And so what I learned from that experience and took with me to this parish was really trying to identify, all right, you know, who are, it's a gift skill set that I have because of my HR recruiting days, but being able to look at the landscape and see, all right, who are the voices and who are the movers and shakers in the parish, and getting to talk with them, getting to know them, and then starting to drop sort of ideas of, well, I'm looking to move in this direction or move in that direction. But the other thing that really helps is I cannot, and maybe it's a fault of mine, I can't stress strategic plans strong enough, because once you have a plan like that, any decision you made that's based on that plan, when people start to complain, I immediately pull the plan out and say, but this is what was said in our sessions, and this is what the voice of the parish was. I'm just responding. If this is not where we are, then we need to have a conversation about it. And that kind of helps with the squeaky wheel, I have found. It kind of becomes the fallback for me and sort of the safety net, that everything we do is driven by the plan so that we can help to bring people along. Yes, ma'am. Uh-huh. No, we haven't done that. I mean, we've added other ministries into the mix, like the Friends group. And I still can't say the word. But anyway, the Friends group there, the gardening group. Yeah, thank you. They just got added, and they fit with the plan and what it was. But you can usually find a way to integrate whatever the group is that wants to start. But, I mean, the one thing that I do, and I know the staff does too now, thank goodness, is whenever anybody's like, we need to have this ministry and this and da-da-da-da-da-da, my immediate response is, great, you going to start it? You going to run it? Well, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm like, that's not going to happen. You know, like, you can't expect us to do everything, because then nothing will get done, you know? So, yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Does your team meet with each of the ministry a set amount of time, or is there any structure to your ministries are broken down by your staff, your groups, and how do they run them? You know,
I'll let them answer. Was there another hand? No? Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much again. Hopefully this is helpful. And feel free to reach out if you have any questions or would like more information. And safe travels home. Bye-bye. Hope to see you next year at the conference.